I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves him.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
Welcome back to Getting My Dad to Say I Love You, the podcast where I chat to people in the industries of comedy, writing, acting, creativity, just awesome people, find out about their parents and try and get them to help me get my dad to say I love you to me. Dad, we've got Ed Gamble this week. You know Ed Gamble?
I've heard of him.
He's a very funny guy, nice guy, sort of started the same time as me. He went to a school not far from my school. Very funny guy. He's also got a dad who I've seen him do stand-up comedy about as well.
Oh dear. Our dad's a good target for stand-up comedy. Well, I suppose they are because you've got Jack Whitehall. His dad made sort of millions out of dad and son comedy.
Yeah, we're trying to do the same here, Dad.
All right.
Go 50-50 on that million.
When's the first paycheck?
Fucking who knows, Dad? Who knows? All right, I'll see you in an hour, Dad.
Yeah, look forward to it.
So, Ed, have both your parents said the sentence "I love you" to you in your life?
Yes, I mean definitely my mum. Tick. I assume my dad has, but I couldn't put my finger on
I thought it as well, but then I realised he'd never done it. So I said to him on a Zoom, can you say I love you to me? And he didn't like it at all. And I just wondered, because all I know, I've written on this, right? I've got a few kind of standard questions, but all I've written for you is big posh dad, because I think you also have a big posh dad like I have.
Well, interesting. So... big, that's a very interesting thing to say, because a lot of people, I got married last week, a lot of people were very much looking forward to meeting my dad, because he's a big part of my material, and he was a lot shorter than a lot of people were expecting, because I think I obviously dial him up in the material, and part of the dialing him up is I puff up, like you say, and do a big posh voice, which isn't necessarily what he fully sounds like, and also he's 5'7". So he's way shorter than people realise.
He is. Were people a bit like, aw?
a little bit.
Disappointed, Mr. Gamble. Thought he'd be at least hitting
And then they had a conversation with him and realised that he's everything I promised them more.
There we go.
Posh, I wouldn't say like super posh. I mean, he likes posh things. He's done.
Is anything about your dad on stage you say true? Or is it
no, it is it is true. I mean, but I think I'm posher than my dad. Like my dad.
Oh, interesting.
My dad wasn't like born into money or anything. He just worked really hard, and then now he likes posh things. But the sort of like the way I bark my lines out and the way I sort of, you know, he is quite a lot like this, but it's not like super, super posh.
Interesting. So you don't think he said, like, if you texted him right now.
I think he has, but it's always... he would never go, it would never be in a moment where it was needed. It would never be like, I love you. It would never be like in a supportive way or in a, it would be hugging him to say goodbye and go, yeah, love you.
Yeah. That's I think a kind of common, awkward man of a certain generation thing. If you text him right now and said, I'm not going to make you do it unless you want to. But if you text him and went, I love you, what do you think his reaction would be?
I think it would be the same reaction that I would have if someone texted me out of the blue and said, I love you, which would be, what's the matter? Where are you? Who's got you?
who's stolen your phone for a prank, basically.
Are you on a plane that's about to go down? Like, I would never text anyone I love you out of the blue, really.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I agree on that. That's fair. It's some people that I just think my dad would be just so terrified. He didn't even like the idea. He doesn't like talking about anything to do with any form of emotion or any, like, it makes him, I discovered that when him and my mum first started going out, was seeing he had another girlfriend at first in Coventry. And my mum started going out with him and said, "Well, you have to dump the woman in Coventry." And he went, "Okay." And he just never dumped her because he couldn't deal with the awkwardness. And I only discovered this like 5 years ago.
And so is he still going out with a woman in Coventry?
I think he's still going out with a woman in Coventry. Yeah, it's just much easier than breaking up with someone. So then I said to him, "Oh, that's funny that you did." And he's just, "I don't want to talk." I just didn't want to talk about it like that. It's too awkward. But I don't, I'm not saying your dad's having an affair with someone in Coventry, but can you talk to your dad about, sounds like so your mum, is she a posh lady?
No, I wouldn't say so. They're all like sort of just resolutely middle class, I think.
Mm-hmm. Suburban middle class.
Yeah, I think. Mm-hmm. So not what I would describe as posh, or not what people would imagine as posh.
That's fair.
Yeah, like slap bang middle class, and I think I would consider myself like upper middle class if we're really sort of like picking out the stratas. So I'm posher than them, I'd say.
That's quite funny. What did they do for jobs?
So my mum worked for the NHS for 30 years. She was a nurse and then a health visitor. Yeah, got to applaud. Get a pan out, bang that around on a Thursday.
Yeah. Rather than give them more money, just a round of applause.
Yeah, a round of applause does it nicely. And she's retired now. And my dad was a solicitor working in corporate law for decades, and has now retired in inverted commas, and probably travels more than he did when he was a solicitor, like working on the boards of various places.
Right. Even, you know, during
COVID, chilling out. He's all over the place. Secret traveling, lockdown parties, that sort of thing. The guy's crazy.
So when you got into stand up, obviously, were they always and have been very supportive?
I mean, yes, in the sense that at no point did they sit me down and go, "You need to stop doing this," or "This is a terrible idea." They were supportive, and I think the right way. I think there's a right way to support kids in that scenario. And I think it's to basically just go, "Oh, that's nice."
Yeah.
And then just,
that's about right.
And then just sort of go along with it, rather than, I think you can be too supportive.
I know exactly what you mean. If you turn up, if you're a parent turning up to lots of gigs, that's,
turning up to
in
gigs.
The same way, if you have another half, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, and it's nice when they come to a gig. If I see someone and they bring their other half to like every gig, I'm like, that person needs to not still find this that interesting.
Oh, God. I mean, I don't know at what point my wife stopped being interested in gigs and stuff, but it's like it was pretty quick, and I really do appreciate that, because you want to... you want downtime for both of you to not be to do with work. And the fact that, you know, some comics have partners coming with them to every single gig. And firstly, you feel sorry for the partner, because you're like, you're spending another night just sat there watching the same act, or awkwardly having to sit in dressing rooms with comedians who completely ignore you.
That's the good sign of the good egg comedians, from when they speak to your other half.
Yeah. And ask them what they do for a living and stuff.
And actually give a shit about them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, "What, you don't just do gigs for £80 above pubs? All right, well, what's that? You save lives for a living. All right, mate, well, come and talk to me when you're making 50 quid at Laughing Horse.
Where's your type five? I think you can be too supportive as a parent. That's how I feel anyway. I think your job is to sort of stand back and let kids make their mistakes, and then be there when things go wrong. And that's very much how my parents were. I'd imagine that's how my mum was, certainly, but I was living with her when I started doing stand-up. And then my dad was probably a bit more hands-off, but was probably more worried about my prospects. And, I mean, get this. I feel confident in saying that comedy is going fairly well. I mean, it's my career and stuff.
And podcasting.
And even now... my dad will occasionally say to me, "So where's all this going?" Are you going to get into management? That's what he can't wrap his head around, that it's not that the career doesn't keep going until you end up managing comedians somehow. He feels like that's the end. The end game is you've got to control other comedians.
I'd love that. You sit with your agents or managers and they go, well, what's your 5-year plan? Well, to have your fucking job in a few years, mate.
I want to be sat at the big boys table with you guys.
I want you to be doing a type 5 and me to be telling you to sort out, where's your Edinburgh show?
It's just the idea that it's a company. And that you start off as a comedian and you build your way up and then you become a manager. The idea that you could become someone's agent and then be demoted to be a comedian again.
I'd fucking love that if there was a week where all agents had to do stand up and we had to be their agents. And then you'd both maybe see why, we all like to sort of, even if you have the best agent or manager in the world, just naturally as human beings are always blaming everything on someone else.
Yeah.
How did they fuck that up? And then if you just sat at an office trying to call people and get spots for your client,
I'd fall apart immediately.
You've touched on an interesting thing there, which I think is quite a common thread for all of us. Your dad, like, supportive but worried. Like, I feel there's a bit of us that does all of this to kind of impress our parents, which is funny because when they're not fully impressed, I think that makes. I remember my dad is very supportive because he used to be a solicitor as well.
Yeah,
but he told me every day of my life, whatever you do, don't you dare become a fucking solicitor. That's all he said to me every day. He literally said that every day. And imagine if I just done it to the weirdest way of backlashing against my dad. But my mum, she's like working class Irish Catholic upbringing, so she's. It's about work and money and trying to kind of build yourself up. Whereas my dad had a job he hated, so just sort of follow your passion. But she immediately was like, what are you doing? Like, I was at university. We were both doing gigs at university together in the Northeast. And then I remember once, as soon as I told her I got £150 for a gig, she was like, okay, like that. So I just wonder if there's... your mum, you said, is a bit. So I didn't. Your mum and dad, and you don't have to talk about stuff. They are divorced.
Yeah, they're not. They're not together. So I grew up with my mum, and my dad lives with my stepmum and my half brother and half sister. I think my mum was the one who had to deal with all of the me deciding to be a comedian and stuff. But she was very cool about it. Also, I think she just knew that there was no point protesting or saying it's not a good idea. Because it does start off as a hobby anyway. Mm-hmm. And there was, I don't know about you, but there was never a moment where I was like, I am going to be a professional comedian. I just started doing gigs because I enjoyed it. And then you start getting paid for it and it gets to the point where you don't have to do other work. Like that's there's no huge revelation.
Yes, that's fair. And so, but with that then, do you think, she's always been supportive when you started doing it and it was going well, was there a bit where your dad's like, are you not going to get a proper, you just do this? Especially because you went you went to a good university and what did you study?
Well, I studied philosophy, so there wasn't a huge amount of hope for me getting a proper job anyway.
there wasn't huge hopes for a corporate job after that.
Well, I remember the day I did my last exam at university and I called my dad and went, I've done it. I've done my final exam, university's over. And then he went, well, there we go. On with life now. So there was no, there's no messing around.
What is it with dad saying that?
Do you know what my dad's catchphrase is? Genuinely, this is a self-appointed catchphrase. And he says this out loud to himself, going around the house while he's doing things, and says it to his children all the time. Life is a job.
How did you become a comedian with that in your life? Life just to himself, walking
to
around.
To himself, so. He'll be like, be doing the recycling or something, or like doing the washing up. And he'll be going, life is a job.
I fucking know this map. This is my dad every day will got to keep the show on the road. Got to keep the show on the road. And I'm like, what show? I'm like, you're literally just going for a piss. Got to keep the show. But I do think it's, and so here's the thing, because comedy to some is like this floaty, but I do think, and the people I'm lucky enough to have as guests on this first series are are all doing very well. And I do think some people think he's got a stage, talk for 20 minutes, get fucking loads of money. Or but you to be successful, like in any field, I feel like you have to work your ass off, mm-hmm. right? And it's weird because sometimes it's damning with faint praise. Oh, he just works hard, but obviously combined with talent. But I do think that thing, if you've had that going through your head the whole time, you probably do you not think you had some subconsciously had like, I love comedy, I'm gonna do, you said you didn't like go, I'm gonna become a stand-up comedian, but you're liking it, doing it. And there must be a point where you were like, life is a job, that's in my head, if I'm gonna do this, because there's people I've seen and you must see who are so talented at this,
yeah,
and people who are way funnier than me, I'm sure way funnier than you, no offense, but like who are still not doing it
it does have to be combined with some work ethic, doesn't it? But I think what's good about it when you really enjoy doing something is it doesn't feel mm-hmm. like you're employing any work ethic. Like,
yes.
Yeah. And also it is way harder when you start out for the first few years. It's a completely back to front job, because jobs should be, they get harder the more pressure there is and the more responsibility there is, and you know, when you're getting paid properly. But comedy is really hard when you start out, and you've got to do the worst rooms to like three people where the light's not pointed at you and the microphone doesn't work properly, and that's where you learn how to do it. And then suddenly when things start going better, it's way easier, especially when people are like excited to see you. It's a piece of piss.
Yeah, you can say any old shit.
Yeah.
Like, and people are, you're like, there is your like early bit of your comedy brain. And why are these fucking idiots? Like, I haven't even done anything yet. I haven't had to work the room. That's interesting. Yeah, it's funny because Hannah actually, just for fun, you know, she mainly acts and we write together, but she did an open mic near us. Out here.
Oh, cool.
And I went to watch, and I was like, I wouldn't fucking do that. That's like, it was just, I was no way I would do, I would die on my arse. It's just like 15 comedians on their phone and in a coffee shop where there was no fee. They hadn't told them about, and I'm like, that's impossible. I couldn't do that. Whereas you're right. And when you do like, you know, a few hundred seats and they love you, it's different. But yeah, so you had that work ethic then, because your dad's, like, did he like his job, or was he just, he was just like, I'm doing a job to raise my kids? And
I think he must have enjoyed it. I think he must have enjoyed it, because it's the same sort of thing. Like, he just kept doing it until he got, you know, quite successful at it. So I think he must have enjoyed, he would never really say that he enjoyed it. And he was, so my half sister is now a qualified lawyer, and I don't think he was overexcited about the prospect of her going into law, because they, I mean, that's worse. I mean, you have to work so hard to train to be a lawyer. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy hours. They treat you like shit. And then it's basically, you are signing up to a life of working all hours God sends to make loads of money, but then not spend any of it.
Yes. Yeah. That as a job, I can't.
Yeah.
People do it. It's like, yeah, it's money, but it pays so well because it's so hard.
Yeah, and I mean, what I do, yeah, I do like about comedy is there is a lot of downtime if you want there to be.
Yeah. But like, I feel like, you know, because you're doing several podcasts, and it's like, people do think, I know you say there's a lot of downtime, but people think that we just like fuck about for 8 hours a day and then turn up. But you must be, there must be that bit of your dad in your brain or something that keeps you throughout the day writing and doing all that. You're always, I don't know, I see.
There's always stuff going on. Like, I've never been someone who can go, right, well, I'm going to write all day and then I'm going to go to the gig in the evening. There's absolutely no, my brain needs to do loads of different things. Even if that's like, do some housework, plan a meal.
I'm with you on that.
Just do loads of bits and then go and do the gig. And on the way to the gig, think about what I'm going to say.
How do you do with, because I really relate to that. I can't, if I don't have like a list of things to tick mm-hmm. off, it's like kind of a type A thing, I go insane. Like, how do you do if you have like, let's say you don't have a gig, if you didn't have a gig or a podcast for 4 days, how would you just enjoy that? Or are you just like,
I would enjoy it, but I'd have to do stuff, even if it's like really boring. Like, even if it's like going to the gym, going to the shops, cooking a meal, doing some housework. And even then, if I have a list of stuff like that, I will stress myself out about getting that list done, even though there's no real reason to get it done. I don't go to the gym. I'm like, well, But the opposite of that is if I go to the gym in the morning, quite often I'm like, well, I've achieved that for today. I'll just go and sit and stare at a wall for the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. I've earned it. Earn that day off after the morning's work. Yeah, I agree. Ticking a thing off a list will keep me going. Like, and so here's the thing then. When you've done these things, you've been telling your dads when you're going to get into management. When you achieve something that you're proud of, do you tell them straight away?
No, because quite often the things that I'm proud of aren't necessarily things that they would have any concept of being good. So, I do a couple of podcasts. I tell my mum about the podcasts.
Listen?
No.
Yeah.
No, so my mum can't work out how to get a podcast, even though I've told her a lot.
Yeah, of course.
But she's like, I will listen. I was like, well, you're quite far behind now, mum. but I will try and catch her up. I think she probably will end up listening to one. But she, to be fair to her, she doesn't listen to any podcast. She's just not plugged into that world.
She doesn't know what a podcast is.
Which is fine. So I tell her when we have a guest on that I know she likes or she'll be impressed with. My dad, I don't think listens.
Who I want to know, because I was chatting with Ronnie Cheng about this. We were talking about mum famous is like the ultimate level of famous.
Yeah.
Who's your mum impressed by?
Joe Brand, Ainsley Harriet, Jamie Oliver.
Wait, that's these true though. We've had on.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are like mum famous people, I think.
Ainsley Harriet is mum famous.
Yes, definitely.
What's so Ainsley Harriet up to now? Sorry, weird tangent. Is he on the telly?
He did our podcast a few weeks ago. He has got a book coming out. I think he might have a new TV show coming out. But as far as I know, walking around being Ainsley Harriet.
He's just walking around getting lauded by mums. Just walks down high streets making their day. Fair enough.
So she was impressed by that. My dad is aware of the podcast. I think he's interested in the business side of the podcast.
How much does it pay is probably one of
the questions. Much money does it make? How do you make the money? How does that work? He must have asked me. He's asked me that so many times. I always tell him the same thing. In fact, at my wedding, I do a radio show as well on Radio X with Matthew Crosby. And Matthew Crosby was at my wedding. And I found out recently that my dad cornered him at the wedding quite late on.
Yes.
Went, you're Matthew, aren't you? You do a radio show with my son. And proceeded to tell him why we've got to stop doing radio. Radio's not the future. That people are really doing well from podcasts these days.
Amazing.
But the thing is, he's learned that from me. So you can't tell me, to get out of radio.
Did Crosby tell him that? The good thing about radio is that some of the, they actually, you can turn the show into a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he tried.
And your dad was like, yeah, no, I still think. I love it so much when a dad has a thing in their head that no matter how much I've just learned to just go, yeah, and just do the thing. He knows a man because he sells old books, and a man who works at a college out here and he buys stuff with and sells them. He goes, you've got to meet this guy. He works at this college. I think he could get you a college gig. And I was like, well, I have like a college agent and you have to go to these kind of conferences in America. So he goes, yeah, I think you should meet this guy. And I'm like, all right. And then I just go for lunch with this guy. And the guy goes, yeah, your dad keeps talking about getting you. I can't get you a gig. And I'm like, I know you can't. I know, but I just come here to say I had the lunch with you because he won't shut up.
It's
weird dad arrogance. That feels like a phrase. Darrogance, where he just is so, because of he's a certain age and he's made a human and he's made a living that he's like, I know things aren't like with it, but just do this. It's just like, fuck me.
He wants to feel like he's still in it and he's networking and he can sort you out. And it's quite sweet, really, isn't it?
It's kind of sweet.
It would be sweet if you didn't have to go for a lunch like that. That's the really annoying bit about
it. The other guy paid for the lunch, which was the kind of thing that made it okay. It was just, you know, that's fine.
Come here, son.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers.
With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I feel like, I don't know if this relates to you as well, but I love my dad in so many ways, and there's a lot of stuff about him that's great, but he was a great role model for me in looking at what I shouldn't do in loads of aspects of my life, as in like... be a nice guy, be, you know, make friends with people. That's very hard. But like some of the stuff he does, I'm like, fuck. I feel like that the parent going, you shouldn't be doing this, Dad.
Yeah.
Is there anything that sticks out in your head with your dad? Or your mum's sort of taking a back seat at the moment now, but in this conversation, but just stuff you're like, all right, that's your way of doing things, but no, I'm not going to.
For sure.
So for me, it was like having the job that he didn't like. I wanted to have a job I liked. Being a massive pisshead, I was like, I'll have a beer, but I won't drink excessive every night. Any things like that that kind of relate?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the work side of things. I'm very proud of my dad for how hard he worked and how successful he made himself and how dedicated he was to his job. But that's not necessarily the schedule that I want all of the time. I'd like to spend... I really like saying no to stuff and being able to have... time with my wife and time with my friends and time with my family. So it's that sort of that dogged approach to work that I don't necessarily get into. And that's what he's very good at.
When you were a kid, cause this is a thing, I only had this revelation when I was watching, have you watched Honey Boy with, Shia LaBeouf? It's basically about his, it's a movie about his dad and he plays his dad in it. It's great. Yeah. And it really caught me off guard. I don't know if you're a crier in movies.
Yeah, totally. I don't
cry in real life when I should cry, but I cry at sport and movies. Like I do it all, get it all. At the end of that movie, I cried constantly for like, I couldn't stop crying. And Hannah was next to me, so I was wrong. I'm like, I think I've got unresolved shit with my dad. I've never, but it made me realize like my dad, the work ethic thing I think is an interesting point because my dad worked really hard, but he'd work all day and then go for dinners at night with people.
Right.
And I saw him not a lot. And I know, so you said your parents broke. Was that a bit of a takeaway? Cause how old were you when your parents separated?
Four. Asking? I was four.
Oh, so you were young. Okay.
Yeah, I was really young, but obviously like, I saw my dad like every weekend. So it's not like he was absent or anything. And that was that.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, it probably worked out quite better than it would have been if they were together, because I had every Saturday with him, like a full Saturday or whatever. Whereas if they were together, I probably wouldn't, like you say, I probably wouldn't have seen him during the weekdays or in the evenings, you had to go and wine and dine clients and stuff. So it's quite nice having that time with him. So I saw him enough for sure, but I just don't want to have work on my mind all of the time. Because I don't have kids, but if I did, I thought I'd like to be one of those dads where other kids at school, when there's like a dad who's like there all the time and is really attentive, and you're like, a bit weird. Why is your dad so good? I want to be a weird, happy dad showing up to you.
Yeah, I feel that. You want to be the dad that's like, just like, it's the mum. Because even now, it's weird, isn't it? Mums come to pick their kid up or whatever, and there's like one dad. It's motherhood, yeah. That show on the BBC. They've got the one kind of, he's kind of a beta male dad character, but you're like, yeah, that is weird that's not normal, but it's not the common thing, is it? So you like to be the dad that's there.
I want to be that guy, even though they do, I mean, that show's great. That guy is painted as an absolute loser, like a proper wimp.
I know. I watched the first episode, I was like, that guy is like, yeah, do you want to be that guy? Because no one wants to be that guy.
But like his main character trait is he's like, a really good dad.
Yeah, I know, he's just a really nice, I know, it's so funny. Look at this piece of shit loving his kids. What a fucking loser.
So I want to be that loser. But there's plenty from my dad I absolutely adore, and there's plenty of his character traits where, I mean, even like when he called him Matthew Crosby at the wedding, my sister went over to Matthew straight afterwards. She waited for my dad to be done, and she went over to Matthew and went, Ed makes a lot more sense now, doesn't he? And Matthew was like, yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. Is your dad, like, my dad is one of those dads that sounds a bit like yours, which is the, he's like one of those, your dad's a legend. Everyone's like, your dad is a legend. And he's such a fun, avuncular, good social thing. He's really good at that. And then I think there's a bit of me that wishes he that's his like happy place to do that. Because it's like entertaining everyone and showing, spreading love out amongst lots of people. But I do think there's a bit of me that's like underneath the surface. It's like, I wish he would just sort of hone that a bit more into how he, but like love could be shown in different ways. And have you heard of that love language thing where people, there's different ways of showing love?
Yeah.
So there's like some people like people being tactile. I've talked about this in another episode. Some people, there's gifts of service. My dad is a big gift of service guy.
Right.
So he's like, he doesn't really like a hug or an I love you, but he's a, I could call him at 3 a.m. in Preston and I'd be like, Dad, I need to get to the airport. I'm coming to get you. I'll drive you to the airport. He's like, that's his thing. It's that life's a job. He's like, I'm doing a job. Does that relate to you?
Yeah, I think so. And also, my dad's like a fantastic cook and stuff as well. So he likes nothing more than to make a massive meal for you. But I think also there's that something that I very much share with him. I'm very similar in that I love cooking a huge meal for people coming over, but there's that sweet part of that where you are just in the kitchen most of the time. So like you do get out there and say, oh, hi guys, everything going well, and sit down and eat with them. But I do quite like that totally alone time cooking in the kitchen.
Oh, interesting. Like the fact that you don't have to be entertaining,
definitely,
everyone.
And I think my dad isn't certainly not as avuncular as you've described your dad. He's fine. He can have a chat with people, but sometimes if you're having a meal with him, if he decides he doesn't have anything to say, he will just go completely silent.
That's interesting. That is exactly what my dad, in a surface level at a pub when there's drink and it's like that.
Yeah.
When it's a meal and we start talking about a subject that he's not interested in, he just goes so quiet.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And I'm like almost like a protest silence.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Like, we're just talking about.
Do you catch yourself doing else. That? Because I,
yeah,
I do.
I do
that.
Mate, I do that. When I first met Hannah, and when we met a friend of hers, who's now a really good friend of ours, who good enough friends with, she went, when I first met you, I thought you were so boring. And I was like, all right. And I went to meet her with Hannah and a couple of friends and their baby. And I just, I don't know what it is, because maybe it's like, our dads aren't comedians, but you're so used to when you've got a mic and people are paying attention to you in this, but certain scenarios, I suddenly go, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to say something. I don't know what it is. It's like I can't even put my finger on it. It's like, I'm going to say something that's not like I can chip in with the odd little gag, but I'm not interesting enough. And I feel like this, I carry this into sometimes my stand-up, and I don't know if I go, I'm not interesting. I just think I'm not an interesting person. So I just sort of shut the fuck up. Whereas some people, especially out here, they're like, and that's what it is as well. I hate people that are loud and just insanely unaware and boring. So I think I'm almost too aware. And I think that's kind of a, I think that's a comedian's trait. But weirdly, loads of comedians are not at all self-aware, which I found very funny.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you not self-aware? Like, you know, when you're just like, you know, in a green room and they're talking about VAT or something. And I'm like, all right, mate, come on, let's, I'm not naming names, but maybe you know what I mean. But yeah, that's interesting. So you do the same. You guys just, shut down a little bit.
Shut down. And I think it probably comes across as quite rude or that I'm not interested at all. I mean, I suppose that is why I'm doing it. But yeah, I think it's also that thing of like, I've got nothing to add. So, or you just like, I just power down. I do that quite a lot, especially even with new people or people I don't know as well. Whereas, yes, some people are amazingly gregarious in that sort of situation. But I think
Go for it. No, I was going to say, I wonder if that's you just made me realize, is that like a comedian's thing where I feel like certain people within 5 seconds, I'm immediately like, I love this person. And I'm like, they give you a bit of banter straight away. And maybe it's because we're so used to hanging out with comedians who are actually like, you know, you get the odd one, but most of them are just like really nice and fun and you have funny conversations. So when you're chatting to someone and they're kind of just, it's sort of just idle chit chat, I think my brain must subconsciously go, oh, this is like, I could be having way, I've had way better conversations. It's almost like watching a bad gig. It's like, I've seen way better. God,
we're awful. We're such awful people, Chris.
Is that awful? Someone said to me,
treat your conversation with a new person as if it's a gig.
No, and if they don't- but it's like, like the gong, I gong show them in my mind. I like hold the red card up. Come on, mate, get off stage. No, my mate is a comedian. Darren said he went away with his other half and her friends to like a cottage a couple of years ago. And I go, how was it? He goes, he's like, it's kind of weird. He goes, I forget, like, as a comedian, you're used to hanging out with funny people. And he goes, none of these people are funny. So there's everything I said, they were just like losing their minds. He goes, like, it was just like, but no one. And you're like, it wasn't like he was trying to be mean. It was just like, that's a kind of, we're used to surrounding ourselves with people that make us chuckle and stuff. So I just think does that make us bad people?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just regularity, isn't it? The fact that we're always surrounded by funny people. But then there's also that thing of like, there are loads of really nice people who aren't funny at all, but you like always associate being funny with having a good personality, if you see what I mean. Whereas I'm sure there's people technically with lovely personalities who just don't have much to offer in the humour stakes.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, but that's different. I think you can tell when someone's like lovely when people aren't making an effort in a conversation. I mean, you must have, how many guests have you had on your, off the menu?
We've done 118 episodes.
You must have had a couple of guests even in that who you're just like, this is hard work, right?
No? Only a couple though, I'd say. Yeah. Because I think because there's a structure to it and there's like, you know, they've got to pick their dream menu and you've got to do the sort of prep in advance. Because we do have that, it's on tram lines. If we want to just take it on to the next bit, we can. But normally we dig in and find something or it just goes completely off the rails.
I said this about when I was single and I was dating. Even if the person was really boring, I could still have a good time because I was just excited to talk to a new, just at someone. I could fake it for like an hour or two and get away. Yeah. So if you have a good structure, you can kind of bring out anything from anyone.
Yeah.
Sorry, back to parents before we wrap this up then. I find this, I don't know why this is kind of, I talked about emotions earlier, but I am with parents, mine, we never spoke about intimate. I'd never be talking about really girls or sex and stuff like that. Could you talk about that sort of stuff? Or did you, I had friends when I was younger growing up and I was like, oh, their parents are so cool. They can talk to them about anything. Did you kind of, with yours, I guess could you talk to them about that? Or did you have parents that you saw do that and were envious of? Like my mate's parents were very loving to him and I'd come and the mum was so loving to me. And I remember being like, I think it's just natural. So, I wish my family was like that to me, but they're not.
Well, what do you mean? Talk to them about specifically well, sort of stuff to do with girls. Yeah. The girls question I can answer quickly. That I managed to get around all of that by simply not having any interaction sexually with women for a long time in my life. So I didn't need to talk to my parents about it. It's an absolutely foolproof system. The best way to avoid awkward conversations is to not involve yourself in any of those things whatsoever. So that was easy. Because I grew up with my mum, my mum's very like affectionate and very loving and very caring.
Your mum sounds so nice, by the way.
Yeah, she's great. She's so great. So that was never, but also like not in a overbearing way. Like she was there if I needed her to.
She smashed being a mum.
Yeah, she's totally. 100%.
She's like, you've got not a bad word to say about your mum, which is lovely.
No, absolutely. Yeah, like, because you go over to, like, mates' houses and stuff, and there's mates whose, you know, parents are never there. You know, they had a couple of mates like that where you'd never see their parents. They just, like, leave dinner in the fridge or whatever, and you're basically this, it's these kids looking after themselves. But then you've got mates who, like, mums are just, like, coming up and, like, hugging them and giving them a kiss in front of their friends and stuff, and you can just see hatred in their child's eyes as they do it.
And your mum gave you the perfect balance in between.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. How are you so good at comedy with such a well balanced mum?
Because of my dad.
That's why he's taken up 90% of the conversation. Yeah.
But because I'm quite affectionate because my mum is quite affectionate. I'm quite tactile. I guess that's probably one of my is it love language? Is that the way you talk about it?
Yeah. Can you tell I live in LA now?
Yeah. I'm very tactile, and my favourite way of being tactile is to people who aren't necessarily tactile themselves. So my dad wouldn't come over and offer a hug or just walk up to me if I'm doing something and like give me a cuddle. But quite often if he's cooking or something or he's doing something around the house, I will just go up to him and like just grab onto him and like give his head a little rub and stuff. And he doesn't mind, but he's but I will just be like, oh, my dad, like constantly touching him and saying hello. So I think
that's very sweet.
It's a nice clash between the fact that I was raised by my mum and spend a lot of time with my dad. Yeah.
As he started, do you think his walls have come down a little bit over time? I think that's a natural thing when people get a bit older and you're grown up, they kind of loosen up or is he just still kind of like, I don't really like it.
No, I think they definitely have. And I don't think he's ever been like, cold or like completely against it, but he would just never initiate anything like that. But yeah, I remember as a kid,
British awkward man.
Yeah, exactly. I remember as a kid, like always being the one to go and grab him and give him a hug or whatever and say, I love you and things. And that's fine. I think he's like, well, yes, thank you.
I accept that. Yeah, that's an acceptable thing to say.
Yeah,
to your
exactly. Yeah. He's a good egg. He's a good egg. That's, you know.
He's a good egg. He's a good egg. Yeah, so I mean, when, you know, it's like kind of the tagline for this is talk about our parents so we can blame them for everything. But ultimately, our lives are pretty good. So, you know, there's things that we can easily blame them for loads of things and things they could have done different, but they made you who you are and you're a good egg yourself. So
you can't
hate on them too
much.
That's
all I hope for. I just didn't tell you this quickly about my dad.
Please.
When I got into comedy, he was very excited when I got my first gig on TV doing stand-up on Russell Howard's Good News.
So, okay then. So when you got told I'm doing this gig, did you call him? And then he was excited.
Yeah,
he was
excited.
I still always tell my
way.
Parents everything. And my mum cannot, sorry to cut into what you were saying, but
no, go for it.
It's just that my mum cannot, because she's Irish Catholic, cannot effusively, she always has to say a thing. Like, she goes, oh, all right, okay. Like, it's just, there's always that. Like, I think I said before, another one, I got in some national commercial, and you know, commercials are commercials, but they pay very well here, and it's just moving to America. And then I sent it to her. She went, whose idea was it to wear a hat?
Mum, I'm never gonna win.
So you called him when you got that.
Yeah, I called him when I got that, and he was like, oh, okay, that's good. That sort of legitimizes stuff a bit, I think, doing stuff on TV. And then I went and did the gig, and I had a story about him in it, which I warned him about. For some reason, when we filmed it, and I had no idea why I did this because I'd never done this live, I said his full name and job down the barrel.
His full name
and job. like down the barrel too, as if I was delivering the routine to him. I said his name. Oh, no, she said his name. His name is Andrew Gamble. He's a lawyer. Right, and he went into work the week after,
like human LinkedIn for him.
Yeah, exactly. And he was like quite important at the time, I think. And he went into work the week after, and like he went into like do a meeting or whatever. Walks into the conference room, and they had it up on the big screen, like they were watching it on the big screen.
That's excellent. How did he take it? He didn't mind.
Whenever he recounts that, which he does on a regular basis. He does it with good humour, but you could see in his eyes he's not. I mean, he's not happy about it. He wasn't happy.
But
that it
wasn't. I think I remember that. Wasn't it him ordering food with a weird name? Or was that different?
Yeah,
thing I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it was. It was the Danish Boog, which I resurrected for my special. But yeah, and annoyingly, it sort of became a bit of a signature routine. It's one that people mention a lot. So I think that's that's partly why he's a bit annoyed. but I think he's fine with my career now, really, because occasionally I get jobs where I'm like, first person I'm going to call about that is Dad, that he'll understand. So I'm a judge on
it. You can tell him the financial rewards you're getting from it.
Yeah, it's that. And then it's just if it's something he's heard of or watched. So yeah. I'm a judge on a food show that he likes. And I got
I know
job.
I saw that. That's so good, mate. Congrats.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy about it. But he was even happier, I think, because he watches that. He loves that show. So he talks to me about that all the time now. Because we speak about food a lot. So me, my dad and my brother are in a WhatsApp group called the Barbecue Boys, where all we do is talk about grilling meat.
That's phenomenal. That's amazing. Is it kind of a strict group where if it gets a little bit off, if anyone's like, well, actually, let's keep it specifically to meat. I don't care about your new, I don't care if you had a new podcast, Ed.
Yeah. We are all Gamble men and we are good at sticking to topic. So there is absolutely no chat about anything else apart from pictures of steaks or pictures of fires. That's basically it. And then we talk about how we've cooked the meat and that's it.
That's fantastically alpha. That's amazing. what does your brother do? If you don't,
so my brother's at college. He's just started college. Yeah. Yeah. My sister's a lawyer. So, yes, there are another couple of good eggs.
The Barbecue Boys. That's just a fucking great name for a band more than anything else. That's so good. That must be, did you feel extra special when you got the gig? Cause you knew Dad's going to like, love.
Oh yeah. That was my first thought. And I knew my mum would be on board with that one as well. I think he's quite excited about that happening. Yeah.
Have you been, that's a weird thing I've never thought of. So you said it. I don't know anyone who's been a judge on a cooking show. You have to, do you have to like practice bits? Like, do you have to like, because if I eat something, like, that's really nice. I can't be like, I watched like, you know, Greg Wallace and he's fucking, that's like putting a rainbow in your eye. And then you're like, oh, that's, yeah. Are you like, I'm going to have to come up with little bits or are you just going to,
no.
you're good off the cuff.
Yeah. I think also because the other judges are like professional food people, I'm definitely there for light relief and to basically go, that's delicious, and take the piss out of them, I think, a little bit as well. So I feel fairly relaxed about what I certainly am not going to scribble down like, oh, the basil dances on the tongue or anything like that. I think I'm just, if anything like that occurs to me, I'm going to go, that's it, the basil dances on the tongue's great.
Yeah, it's write that one down, obviously, and say it, and then I'll say that you ripped it. I'll be like back of the room. I was there for that riff. One thing I only just thought of as well. I don't like eating in front of people who aren't eating. Like that's you're just putting yourself right out there. People are going to see your mouth chewing on the screen.
Yeah, chewing away.
Yeah, doesn't
I
worry.
No, slop, slop, slop. I don't mind.
I don't give a shit. A little, like a pig in shit, just going to be rolling around. I don't care. Mate, this has been so lovely. Before we go, though, two little last questions to ask. If your parents are listening, they don't have to listen to a podcast.
They don't know how.
What would you say to them if they could listen right now?
Thank you. And also, sorry.
Sorry for what?
I don't know.
Be lovely about it.
Sorry, I'm sure there's plenty of things to be sorry for. No, thank you very much.
That's the most British fucking thing I've ever seen. Thank you and sorry.
It's good to apologise in advance or for anything. Yeah, I'm sure I have to apologise for something, so sorry for that.
No, I know. No, I appreciate that. This is what I miss, fucking chatting to British people. It's just too much I'm not sorry, and I'm going to be loud about it out here.
Yeah.
Always apologize and be self-deprecating. And then, so my dad, like I said, he can give me a lift to the airport, but I just want him to like not be weirded out. I mean, it doesn't help that I'm kind of telling him, saying, I love you. Because I say I love you to him, and I want him to say it back, and he just doesn't, he can't. Have you got anything you could say to John Martin to help him just say I love you?
Just try it once. Realise the world's not going to implode. And then next thing you know, you'll be saying, try once a week. Start with once. Realise that nothing bad's going to happen. Schedule it in. Maybe the Wednesday after.
Put it in the diary.
I love you. Keep doing it, and then it'll just become natural. Next thing you know, you're doing it four times a week.
It's like you're trying. It's like a fitness instructor.
Yeah. Just
once a week, just go to the gym. Just do a few reps.
Just start by getting out of your chair.
Start just some gentle walking. Yeah. Walking with very small weights, and then soon you'll be fucking Mr. Universe.
He basically needs to do the couch to 5K of I love you.
Yeah. That's. I mean. We'll try it. I'm going to play him this audio and I'll get his reaction and people can listen to it afterwards. Ed Gamble, you've been a delight. Your mum sounds like just like a dream mum. I just...
Top mum.
I mean, I love my mum, but I just... You know, when you hear something, I'm jealous of your mum. And your dad sounds like a good egg as well. You do lots of stuff. Do you want to just quickly give... I've mentioned Off the Menu, which is a brilliant podcast.
It's just off menu, Chris. There's no the...
you'll
be happy to hear you're not the first.
I feel like a dad. I feel like a dad. Yeah, I've been calling exactly it off the. I literally. I've been calling
exactly
it off the menu.
What dads would do.
I've become my dad, which is a terrifying call.
Well, also,
he calls an avocado an advocado. I cannot understand why. Off the menu. I hate myself.
We had Jamie Oliver on a couple of weeks ago, and he posted it on his Instagram story with the logo of the podcast, and then above he wrote, "Such a great time on Off the Menu with these boys." Even though it was above the logo, which says Off Menu, but you know,
isn't he dyslexic though?
Oh no, maybe.
Yes.
Also a dad. He's also a dad, so it's double.
He can't catch a break, this guy.
He's both the dads. So I do that podcast about food with James Acaster. And then I do a radio show with Matthew Crosby, even though radio is dying. But that's also a podcast. I do a podcast about Taskmaster, the television show Taskmaster, called the Taskmaster Podcast. And then also I'm just gigging. All over the place. On tour next year.
Where's your website, mate?
EdGamble.co.uk. On tour in the UK, February 2022.
Oh, go watch Ed. He's one of the good guys.
He basically needs to do the couch to 5K of I love you.
Gosh, it sounds like it's a sex instruction course.
What do you mean? What does that mean?
What's a sex instruction
course? You mean on the sex instruction course? Is that a thing?
Well, that was what he was suggesting, and then he thought if I got good at it, I could go three times a week.
Here's what I'm trying to break down, and I don't want to know too many details about you and Mum's sex life. You think that doing something once a week and then doing it three times? Do you think that's how people have sex? They do it once a week and build it up to three times a week.
Yeah, you seem to be sort of encouraging that. I don't think it works like that, though.
Why did it sound like a sex instruction course?
Well, it just did. It sounded like he was running a biology class at an English public school.
Your sex education teacher told you to have sex once a week. Is that what you're telling me?
No, I don't think so. No, he was. He was called Colonel Barnley. He was
shout out Colonel Barnley if you're listening.
No, he's dead.
R.I.P. Colonel Barnley.
He'd been in West Africa killing tsetse flies. Maybe they had sex three times a week. I don't know. Maybe that was part of his research. I have no idea.
Okay, so we've gone from Ed Gamble saying, just start saying I love you once a week, to your old biology teacher killing flies in Africa.
Yeah, tsetse flies, they're quite bad. You don't want them in the...
All right.
In the tropics, they kill off lots of people and they're very bad.
Good. That's another classic John Martin deflection. We're on to flies. All right, Dad, based on your reaction to that sounding like sex advice, you're probably not going to say I love you right now, are you?
I have to give it a bit of thought because it's introduced another sort of dimension into the whole package.
Well, let's just come back next week. We're going to come back next week. Say see you next week.
See you next week.
Yeah, I love you, Dad.
Keep safe.
Keep safe. I love you.
Everyone says keep safe.
Yeah, they do. I know. All right. Cheers.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.